God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be lights. Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. Lots to get to in the show today. Of course, the Tower of Babbling, wrap up the show with a personal note and giving this one some thoughts. I don't normally think of these in advance, but I'm excited to tell you about someone who saw something in me that no one else saw. Can't wait to do that today. Did you know that there is a dastardly and secret plan? And this, give them credit, they've hid this well. The Republicans have designed a system that will block 69 million women from voting. Brilliant. And give them credit. I mean, they hid it in broad daylight. The SAVE Act. This is to assure that only citizens vote. Did you know that married women who took their husband's name are not going to be allowed to vote? So dastardly. And such a good design, because who would ever catch this? You know, this would be like, I don't know, what would be a comparison? You know, not checking anyone's ID or something stupid like that that would never happen, or, you know, allowing just common everyday citizens to arrive at a ballot box, drop box with, say, I don't know, 400, 500 ballots. It's just things like this just don't go on in America. This is what's being claimed by the Democrats. Gladly, there's this thing called an amendment process to bills. Chip Roy sponsored this bill. And gladly, you can also go Google the full text of the SAVE Act in Congress 2025, and you can read the bill in all the forms of ID it allows to prove you are a United States citizen. But then again, we do live in a country where it is impossible for married women who took their husbands' names to have bank accounts. That can't happen. Or to be in the military, because that can't happen. The hysteria that the Democrats are willing to pour upon society. There was a, is there a corollary to this? Yeah, there is. I knew a family whose little boy was savagely attacked by dogs. And it was, I mean, it was very bad. And the boy was very badly scarred in his arms and his hands. And the family then taught him and everyone else that all dogs are dangerous. And as a consequence to that, all their kids acted like prey animals around dogs. And all dogs were consequently dangerous because dogs sense fear, and it makes them, it keys up that part of them that's still wolf and predator. And even little dogs would yip at them because they want to be in charge. It's a dominance chain. And gladly, none of the kids were attacked, but they lived forever with a fear of dogs that manifested all the way up into adulthood. And eventually, in adulthood, a couple of these adults cognitively knew not all dogs are going to attack you, but they had to go through a process of exposure therapy so they could just stop being terrified of dogs. They're terrified of dogs on TV. That's minor to putting in the heads of girls and women that Republicans sought to steal the votes of 69 million women. When people are constantly terrorized, constantly told that they're at risk, constantly told that people are lurking in the corner to steal their constitutional rights, constantly and forever told this, the results are going to end up being all Republicans are X, Y, sexual assaulters, abusers, haters of women. But it also does something that the Democrats deeply need, which it slows the process of reform. Democrats can't stand honest elections because they're better at stealing them than Republicans. I don't want anybody stealing elections. I don't think you do either. I am the son of a single mother, largely. I mean, obviously, my dad was a dad, and he made a bad decision, and he did what he could within the bad decision. I'm a daughter of daughters. I'm married to a woman. I've had business partners who are women. I don't want to see women's votes stolen. Representative Andy Harris explained how the SAVE Act will work to allow to stop allowing non-citizens to vote.
People actually strongly support the SAVE Act. They think it's just common sense that you actually should put in place. You know, the issue was that we already have a law in place. In fact, the gentleman from South Carolina, I think, fully understands that law is not very clear because the establishment of intent is unclear in the law. So, for instance, if you go into the Department of Motor Vehicles in the state of Maryland and you are an illegal, because an illegal alien can own a car, they can get a driver's license, they can do that. You sit at a computer screen and a screen flashes up and says, well, do you want to register to vote? So what they have to do is they have to push yes. And the DMV person, and I know because I did this a couple times at DMV, they don't come and say, oh, but you know, you have to be an American citizen, or you have to be this. They're not going over the rules with you. So in fact, the way it's established, the way some states have established voter registration, allows the illegal alien to register to vote, perhaps without intending to do it, to break the law. The SAVE Act fills in the loophole. It's a belts and suspenders approach. The American people expect it because the reports of people voting illegal.
So a couple things, anecdotal first and then factual. Well, let me start with the factual, actually. Katherine Engelbart, one of the greatest heroes in election integrity in our country, the IRS attempted to crush her and her organization, True the Vote. They were asking her questions like, what dreams do you have? What books do you read? And then, of course, there was the instance of the IRS illegally giving the DOJ the names of donors to such organizations to be pressured. She has read in federal legislation the fact that if you identify as a citizen when you cast a vote, you're here illegally, but you think you're a citizen, you can't be prosecuted. Let's try that with any other crime. I thought it was okay to steal that car because I thought it was mine. I thought when I broke into this bank, that was my money and my bank and my door and my torch I used that I sold. Doesn't work. Now, of course, this is all about an aspect of populism. President Trump partially ran on safe, secure elections, a single election day, paper trail for ballots, no more digital systems that are so hackable because if it can be coded, it can be hacked. Actual poll observers, all of these things that matter are checking ID, checking signatures, making sure that non-citizens aren't voting. Now, that's all common sense, but it's also become a populist thing. Anecdotally speaking, non-citizens voting, every election cycle that I did morning radio in Seattle, every election cycle, I would get pictures of ballots sent to foreign exchange students. Famously, a family had said they had Chinese foreign exchange students, and the Chinese girls, and they were girls, got these ballots. They panicked. We're going to go to prison. This is illegal for us to have these ballots. And the family said, no, it's not your fault. You're not going to vote. We'll destroy the ballots. You would only be breaking the law if you voted. And we'll get to the election officials and tell them these girls are here on education visas. They're not citizens. They can't vote. Don't send more ballots. Guess what came back 2 years later? More ballots. Twice as many this time. Twice as many. So the system loves these things. So it became a populist approach because government was refusing to address it. When pent-up frustration happens and a politician steps in and says, I will actually talk about this, change occurs. President Trump won the nomination the first time around when he came down the escalator and said, I'm going to build a wall. It's going to be the most beautiful wall ever, because Republicans in their official talking points were told to pretend you can't build a wall because they wanted the illegal immigration for the downward pressure on wages, because the CEO roundtable wanted it and the Chamber of Commerce in Washington, D.C. demanded it. There's the background. So it became populist. Populism is sweeping the globe because governments have united against the people. For instance, you can't say hydroxychloroquine worked for me. That's illegal and that's misinformation. And you can't say that ivermectin worked for me. It clearly didn't. And you can't ask questions like, hey, if I can smell my neighbor's cologne with my woke mask on, how is it that this is stopping viral particles? That's misinformation. And you can't question why the newcomers are allowed to seize neighborhoods and run Islamic prayers 10 times a day, but street preachers preaching the word of God are arrested. That's anti-immigrant. That's a hate crime. Our human spirits sense these things. God is pro-free speech. He's not a populist because he owns everything. But Jesus was more populist than system guy. I don't think it was just because he was recognized everywhere that he went to the small communities. He could have gone to the capitals and been top down, but he went to the people. Maybe that's because where the pain was. Marine Le Pen is not Jesus. Donald Trump is not Jesus. They're populists. Marine Le Pen had been the top candidate to be president in France until she was banned from politics because of a 4 or 5 year old campaign financing scandal. Here's the allegations. Some of her staff worked on official duty during their official capacity doing campaign stuff. That's the charge. Oh, and she's dangerous to democracy because she said things. Those are the charges. She's been convicted. She's had her sentence suspended, but she has to wear an ankle bracelet. And glory be, look at this. She's been banned from politics. She can't be president. That's not going to work because the frustration stays bent up. President Trump had a comment for France after Marine Le Pen was banned from running for office.
France today, Mr. President, Marine Le Pen, the far-right leader, got convicted in court and is now banned from running for office for 5 years. Do you have a comment?
That's a big deal. That's a very big deal. I know all about it, and a lot of people thought she wasn't going to be convicted of anything, and I don't know if it means conviction, but she was banned for running for 5 years, and she's the leading candidate. That sounds like this country. That sounds very much like this country. Okay, anybody else?
It does. That's what they attempted to do to President Trump. Now, if they had succeeded in that, what do you think President Trump would have done? Well, oh, they got me. I guess there's nothing I can do. No. He would have said, my son Eric's going to run. And Eric would have won in bigger numbers than President Trump did. The people in power can't see it. They can't see that we see that they don't see. Here's an example, unrelated to immigration of France. This is Leslie Stahl. We get back. She had a question for a man who was tortured, beaten, and starved. You'll hear that question, and then we'll get in the world, but not of it. And then Tower Babbling, and wrapping up the show with a personal note about someone who saw something in me that no one else did, and probably no one else ever will. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples View. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. I appreciate you being part of the AFR family. We'll get into being in the world and not of it, and this is definitely the beginning of that. There was a moment where Leslie Stahl had her "Do You Hear Yourself" moment. I continue to believe that that was one of the greatest lines ever uttered in the history of a office holder interacting with a member of the media. When J.D. Vance said to Martha Raddatz, who was busily insisting that since only a few apartment buildings in the United States of America had been seized by violent Venezuelan gangs, it was not a big deal. And J.D. Vance began to answer and then became truly, I think, emotionally flabbergasted and said, "Martha, do you hear yourself?" In an effort to, let's say, polish the narrative, Leslie Stahl is very much like the bosses in France who've decided, we'll wipe out populism by going to the people and saying, we're going to put your selected populist candidate, Marine Le Pen, we're going to ban her from politics. Now, shut up and vote our way. I'll say that in the French. I can't speak French. Beautiful language, by the way. Spoken well. That's not going to work. I would think that the French leaders would understand a little bit more about history. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Charles Dickens writing about blood in the streets. Did you know he was paid by the word, by the way? God bless him for being good at words. It's a lot like this. The Democrats, so bereft of ideas that they have, and give them credit, they've convinced some women that the Republicans literally intend to ban 69 million women from voting because they took on their husbands' names. Yeah, that's believable, isn't it? Everybody believes that, right? Well, everybody believes Leslie Stahl's just being a journalist. Leslie Stahl had a question for a man who was tortured, beaten, and starved by Hamas.
The terrorists became very mean and very cruel and violent.
More so.
Much more so. They were beating me and starving me.
Do you think they starved you or they just didn't have food?
No, I think they starved me, and they would often eat in front of me and not offer me food.
Wow. Wow. Leslie, do you hear yourself? Have you seen where the actual leaders of Hamas live? In luxury apartments, I think in Qatar? On the top of beautiful towers? Have you not witnessed the money that we pour into their hands? Do you choose to be unaware of the fact that countries in the Middle East fund Hamas with the express purpose of putting pressure on what they call the Jewish entity? Have you chosen to not see the massive border fences between the Palestinian territories and other Islamic countries? Do you hear yourself? More importantly, Ms. Stahl, do you know that we know that you don't know and can't see how obvious the narrative polishing is? I pray that people will know. Do you know who Marvin Sapp is? As we get into the world and not of it, I beg you to listen to this with an open heart, really. I think that there are often these clips of people from the pulpit are truly beyond the pale, very easy to point out. This is terribly wrong, terribly non-biblical. And as I'm watching Marvin Sapp here, and we'll play this quote and this piece, but as I watch this, it wasn't what I was expecting given the headline. And I sense in this man, and this is just me sensing, I don't have any special reason to say this about him. I've never met him. I sense in him a true and complete and real, honest zeal and love for the Lord, maybe even a jealousy for his word. That's jealousy in a positive sense, wanting more and more of it and wanting it above all. And yet, I've been a performer. I've been on stage. Gosh knows, I have spoken words on radio that have hurt people. In my zeal to communicate, I've hurt friends. Sometimes I've hurt associates. I just sometimes don't filter. So I want you to have the open heart I didn't when I clicked on the link and expected something here in show research. So here's what happened is Marvin Sapp closed the doors of this church with a congregation inside so they would raise $40,000 in offering money.
And they understand the cost that is involved. There's 1,000 of you, I said close them doors. Ushers, close the doors. Close the doors. Close the doors. We all gonna leave together. Y'all ain't going no place but to the restaurant. There's 1,000 of you tonight, and those that are watching, it's 1,000 that's watching online. This is a small seed. If I get 1,000 online to give this, if I get 1,000 in the sanctuary to give this, that's $40,000 tonight. I'm challenging each of you all down here to give a $20 seed. I just think $20 is a lot of money. $20, believe it or not, when my late wife Melinda P. Sapp was alive, was a good date. I could take her to the movies,
love this
buy
man.
A box of popcorn, get one soda, two straws.
I love this man.
I wasn't cheap. That's swag. I was looking in her eyes. She's looking in mine. Can't do that no more. Now, everyone up here, we've all sowed and seeded, but I need everyone standing up here with us, with me, to plant a seed of $100. Because again, it costs to sit up here. I got you. Let's see. So put your 20 away, preachers. That 20 wasn't for you. And this is what I need you to do. If you're giving electronically, or even if you're giving tangibly, I'm going to have y'all come to the altar and give it, because I need to see 1,000 people moving. Bring them baskets. I want the baskets up here. I want to see the folk. Y'all start moving.
Incidentally.
Y'all bring it right now. Come. Even if you're giving tangibly,
we can wrap
just
that
put
up.
Your hand on the...
Incidentally, I want you to know that Marvin Sapp was among the first to reach into his money. I want you to know this. Now, what bothers about that? I get it, and I'm going to get emails, and I welcome them. You can go to thetoddhermanshow.com and email me there if you want the management at AFR to see it. It's comments at AFR.net. Feel free. I love the feedback. I've had people say to me, you just don't like charismatics. I have to tell you, I don't know that I've ever been to a charismatic church. So I'm probably unfamiliar with it. So here's my concern. And again, please hear me. I really sense that man loves the Lord, and he's funny, and he's warm. He's the sort of dude I want to hug, personally. We are so at risk. Satan wants to take the tiniest thing, and he will take if he can't get a toe hold, he'll take a toenail hold. And from a toenail to a toe, to half a foot, to a foot, to a leg, to a knee, to a body, to he wants your soul. He hides and he masquerades as an angel of light. And it here is my concern. I understand theatrics. And this gentleman said, no, close the doors. He said it twice. No, shut the doors. I said, shut the doors. You're not leaving. We're leaving together. And then employing some, again, warm, well-meant, I believe, true servanthood to the Lord, not doing what he did, what he was telling people to do. He reached into his money. He didn't want the pastors reaching into theirs. But what does God tell us about giving? I mean, a lot of things. Jesus talked a lot about money. Now, this is 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 6 through 9. Generosity encouraged. Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you've decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion. For God loves a cheerful giver. And if God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things and in all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work, as it is written, they have freely scattered their gifts to the poor, their righteousness endures forever. God does not want us giving reluctantly or under compulsion. The entire story of God is about our freedom to choose. God does not want love robots. He doesn't want automatons. He wants people who are willing to be humbled, sometimes crushed with their own inequities, sometimes crushed at their capacity for ego, so that we come to him and recognize his greatness, his astounding goodness. And it's from that that we give back part of what he gave to us to manage. It's his money. He says, you can use 90%. I understand that people differ on tithing. I don't think we differ on the fact that we are to give back. So that's my concern there is, I hope that in that congregation, that gentleman who I truly believe loves the Lord, I hope he didn't create a bunch of reluctant givers. Now you see, that is one form of danger. It's minor, I think, in comparison to what we see in society. This is a leaked training video from an Atlanta area megachurch called North Point, and it's advising Christian leaders, teaching 11 to 14-year-olds to affirm so-called trans children by using their preferred pronouns. The training video starts out by explaining the many terms used by the sexual left.
We know that if we create a safe place, more students will share things with us that are difficult to navigate. So I want to talk through how we care for students who are experiencing gender dysphoria. Now, gender dysphoria, this is a weird term. We don't hear it a lot. Basically, this is the clinical term used for anyone who is unsure about their own gender. Dysphoria is the opposite of euphoria. Euphoria is like joy, happiness, contentment, excitement over a situation. Gender dysphoria is like they're not comfortable. They don't have joy over it. They're not sure where they land. So this is the umbrella term for several different terms that could be underneath gender dysphoria. The terms transgender or non-binary are some sample terms that an adult might use to describe who they are if they're trying to figure out their gender. Our goal in these situations is to best support the student and the family. Now, this is an extremely small part of the population. It's more likely they won't happen in your small group in middle school, but we want to make sure we're prepared and we've thought through how to best care for these students.
So, to best care for them, where did they land? After describing this home life of a so-called transgender child, the training video points out that it would be uncomfortable for the church to speak the truth.
At this point, the next big thing that's going to happen is them starting to ask the public to start using a different set of pronouns and a different name. They finally go to the school system and ask them to start using those different pronouns. And what eventually happened was the school system, the family, the extended family, were all using different name and pronouns for this child, but their local church would not do it. Their local church said, nah, because we've known him since he was a little boy, we're not going to start saying her. So not here, not at our church. We've known you too long to be able to do that. And so everywhere this child went in life, they were saying you are one thing, but only at church, they had to pretend to be something else. And they had to leave that church. And they finally came here, started talking to our care ministry staff. And we realized, oh my goodness, we cannot be the last place a student feels comfortable. That's the opposite of our goal for church, is to be the last place you feel comfortable talking about anything.
I am breathless. The reason, according to this church, that people don't want to use, don't want to say to a girl that she's a boy, is because, well, just because we've known you your whole life. No. No, that's not why. Because it's not true. You should not lie. You cannot change your sex. And these are horribly difficult conversations, and I've had them. I've had them with kids. And it never gets fun. But it begins with, I know that this is deeply, deeply important to you. And out of respect for you, I'll do the very best I can to not use pronouns around you, and I will slip. But I care for you far too much to lie. I do not believe for a second that you have become a boy or that you ever can. And I believe that God loves you and deeply wants you to realize you were knit together wonderfully and fearfully in your mother's womb as a girl or a boy. Doesn't mean I don't love you and that we can't agree on other things. Satan wants the hard things to be hard. If we consult God's word, truth is clear. And when it's spoken in grace, it's powerful. God's word never returns void. Lies always eventually do. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Get to a tire babbling here in a personal note in just a second. A couple of cleanup items. I don't know why I call them that. It's just things that we need to get to during the show. You're about to hear the latest PBS gender propaganda toward children. That's in the tire babbling. I'm sorry. I've been distracted. I apologize. I'll give you all your money back that you ever paid me. Well, you, AFR. Wait, you guys don't pay me for this. I do apologize. Let's do the cleanup items. Listen to this oncologist describe the uptick in cancers after the COVID injection was rolled out.
I have a friend who was in remission from cancer,
right,
and had been doing great. And her doctor insisted that she got the shot. And like 3 weeks later, the cancer was back full blown. She went to stage four.
How many? Well, because it affects the immune system.
Exactly. Right.
How many oncologists are noticing the rise of cancers and rare cancers after the COVID shot?
It's everywhere. And oncologists are screaming at the top of their lungs. Mm-hmm. And they're seeing a correlation, not with COVID, the virus, but when the vaccine rolled out, an uptick in cancers over the military complex. I went through what's called the Department of Defense Epidemiological System. And that particular system showed a 40% uptick in cancers starting in 2021.
It's becoming undeniable. Alex Berenson is an important journalist, former New York Times journalist. He's been unbelievably good at covering COVID, and he's been well-rewarded in that way. He has finally recognized this. He's a very careful man, and I respect that, but he's also 2 years late on this. It's been very, very clear. And yet Alex is a journalist with very tight standards in that. I choose to respect that. RFK Jr. just dismissed so-called Dr. Peter Marks, the FDA's chief so-called vaccine regulator, who acknowledged a massive spike in adverse events linked to the COVID shots.
As of February 2024, VAERS reports for COVID-19 vaccines total significantly higher than all other vaccines combined since 1990, as reported. This is a surprising figure. Dr. Marks was the government prepared for such an avalanche of reports to VAERS, and it kind of goes with what we just mentioned. So,
Chair Wenstrup, thank you so much for that question. And I apologize about your name before. It shows when you're nervous, things can happen. But the point is extremely well taken. We tried to be prepared for that, but the avalanche of reports was tremendous. And it, again, required retasking people on the fly I'll let my CDC colleagues speak to this. We had to hugely staff up and had many meetings working to increase our ability to go through these reports.
And yet they stayed on the market. And that so-called doctor continued to insist they were safe and effective. Now, given that he was in a position of power, sometimes it's frustrating to do this. But in this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people like so-called Dr. Marx on tall towers of shaking sand with her feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Who doesn't love a yellow school bus?
Trans women are women, trans men are men, and non-binary people are non-binary.
If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in today's Tower of Babbling, and in this one, you're going to get to listen to the latest PBS gender propaganda targeted towards ages 3 through 8.
So, get your singing voices ready. And we're going to start with our hips. The hips on the drag queen go swish, swish, swish. Swish, swish, swish. The shoulders on the drag queen go shimmy, shimmy, shimmy. Shimmy, shimmy, shimmy. Shimmy, shimmy, shimmy.
It's very, very important that men dressed as over-sexualized version of women swish their hips for kids. It's the only way they're going to learn. Next soundbite, today's Tower Babbling. The NPR CEO, Catherine Mayer, does not recall writing out a tweet calling for reparations and then hitting send.
Do you think that white people should pay reparations?
I have never said that, sir.
Yes, you did. You said it in January of 2020. You tweeted, yes, the North, yes, all of us, yes, America, yes, our original collective sin and unpaid debt, yes, reparations, yes, on this day.
I don't believe that was a reference to fiscal reparations, sir.
What kind of reparations was it a reference to?
I think it was just a reference to the idea that we all owe much to the people who came before us.
That's a bizarre way to frame what you tweeted.
Yes, of course, emotional reparations. Of course, that's a phrase used never, ever. Last soundbite on today's Tower Babbling. Tim Walz wants you to know he has learned nothing from the election.
That our strength is our diversity. We've been talking about this for years as a country of immigrants, and we let them define the issue on immigration. We let them define the issue on DEI, and we let them define what woke is. We got ourselves in this mess because we weren't bold enough to stand up and say, you right, we're proud of these policies. We're going to put them in, and we're going to execute them. And so...
that's why they lost? Not enough? Huh. I encourage you, Tim, continue on that line of thinking. That'll be really, really good for you because you'll never be president, which you won't be anyway. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
Destruction of property is a perfectly viable source of protest. No harming humans, obviously. Yeah. Human life is sacred no matter whose it is. But property is, these are just things. These are just cars.
That was the Tower of Babbling on A Disciple's View.
On a personal note, I both wish you could, I guess I could somehow get these to you. Could see me back in the day in 1994-95. And I don't know that I can ever sufficiently understand what someone saw in me. So let's go to the tape. I weighed, oh gosh, probably not yet at that point, over 320 pounds. but I would eventually get up to 380 or so. And there were people who said, you carry your weight well. Like, no, my frame in high school and wrestling was between 190 and 200 pounds. I'm right now about 210 or 209. So no, I didn't. Nor did my super long ponytail going down to the middle of my back and my red pirate's beard and my hair constantly and always pulled back. And unless I thought I was going to be super cool and take it out of the ponytail and flay it about my face. Because though I wanted to look like Greg Allman, I didn't, because Greg Allman didn't look like a kind of floating great pumpkin dude. Then there was the multicolor hippie vest that I like to wear that was knit. And I would wear that over a often over a white linen shirt or a single colored shirt, never tucked in, because, you know, why tuck it in when the belt you're wearing is going to expose the fact that you don't care for your body at all. Oh, the earring. Right. That was a super good touch, not to mention the John Lennon shades. This circular glasses that actually heightened the fact that I'd eaten my way out of having any visible chin or facial bone at all. I was a, you would think of as sort of a boneless, what would it be? A puffer fish of a dude. And I had a radio show. And I decided that infamy was a shortcut to fame. I was a young kid and I had everything in the world in mind of being a very famous talk show host. I don't ever, these days, can't remember why. No, I can remember the whys. Why I wanted to be famous. I just can't conjure the feelings. Somehow in that, a woman who never should have achieved the life she achieved somehow said, I want to meet him. And I've had people say, well, that's a weird way to meet someone. Wait, people meet at work all the time. I have friends of mine who met in tech. I have a friend of mine who was a paramedic. He met his wife. She worked in the emergency room. I've got a friend of mine who was an architect and ended up marrying someone who did CAD design for him. And I was working. She was listening. And she reached out. And one day, maybe, probably not, but maybe I'll get her to tell the story. Maybe. Unlikely. She tells it really well, except for one part. We disagree on this little, tiny, insubstantial thing she said. And we went out. I waited the requisite 2 days. Oh, no, three. To call, because that's what you did. You didn't want to appear too eager, but also not too standoffish. 3 days was considered wise. I called her. We agreed to lunch. And that lunch lasted 2 hours. And she had hair that was like the deepest, shiniest, most sun-reflective, kind of chestnut colored, beautiful, long, soft hair. And she had a way of speaking to me that made me want to listen rather than speak. And she had every reason to have given up and fought. Every reason to have accepted a different so-called station, but wouldn't. And eventually, I gave her a nickname. And over time, that nickname grew. My daughter knows the entire nickname because by now you've guessed I'm talking about my wife. 29 years together. 21 of that in marriage. We were engaged far too long, my fault. And in that first lunch, it was the conversation I thought of later. and this phrase, wow, what a connection. And through our relationship, and then finally when I let God start the process of growing me up, marriage, there were these risky schemes. And that woman loved me enough and trusted me enough for her to put aside fear and go with enthusiasm for the risky schemes. And God paid him off. A couple businesses, some of them did very, very well. And I was not someone who had a lot of ability to sit and say simply, wow, look where God has placed me. Look at this job, say for instance at Microsoft, look at this money, look at the stock ownership, look at the stability, look at the fact that we could move right over here, we could be within a half hour from campus, and look at all the beautiful private schools, and look what we could do, and I didn't have that gratitude. And she said, you'd be miserable. Go take these risks, I believe in you. And I deeply, deeply needed a partner like that. And at the times where I've imagined, when I'm in the spirit, when I'm thinking rationally and spirit-led, none of this should have happened. Think of the odds. I grew up in Washington. She grew up in Utah. She didn't listen to talk radio. She was a rock and roller. But what are the odds that she turned on that station and heard that voice and said, wow, there's something here. And then to go to the website and see me. And here she is running 5 miles a day in this amazing shape. And she's looking at this puffer fish face dude with the long hair. Now, I did wear a suit, but come on. What are the odds, 29 years later, that I would live in terror of not having that? And in the deepest possible love that someone could give someone in 29 years. That's a God thing, don't you think? In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God, because we believe. We speak because he first loved us. We speak his word. We walk in the path of Jesus to make disciples of all nations until God gives us permission to speak again together. May his peace wash over you. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.